things. I mean, saying God isn't everything, you got to watch out, right? That sounds a little bit.
Yeah, you get the theodicy problem there.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
I tend to think that if God didn't exist, everything would just poof, kind of disappear. But yet, yeah, well, I kind of, but yes, it has an economy and a freedom. That's where I come at it.
Okay.
So, all right, who has a question?
Can I ask the first question?
That was it. What do you think of that?
What did I think of?
Well,
no.
Hey, I missed the last.
Not fair.
Huh?
Go ahead.
No. I got to hear Randy talk three times now, okay? And so, but our other venues didn't allow the proper, the audience had to ask the questions, but here I wanted to ask, what do you think of passages like Romans 1:18 that say evidence for the existence of God is clearly seen in the things that have been made, so that those who do not believe are without excuse?
Well, first of all, you must use a different translation. Mine doesn't have the existence of God. Mine says the power and the glory of God. So I think in that context, atheism wasn't particularly rampant. It's not clear to me that he was talking about the existence of God, for one thing. In a way, it's more of coming from, I know there's a God, but now I can see his characteristics. So I think that's one aspect. But I don't think that's really a proof text that will say that looking at the world, that we can make what we call scientific evidence for the existence of God. And what we should have done here, actually, is to discuss this, we should have taken some time to say, what do we mean by evidence?
Yeah.
You know, and what do we mean by existence? And what do we mean by God? I mean, that's a whole set of questions that did come up in the last couple of evenings.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, Romans 1 is fantastic. I fully agree. I mean, we all see the power and the glory of God. I mean, that's great.
Well, I would, in the context, it's talking about people who sort of push away, and maybe you're saying they're not atheists, they're just people who believe there's a God and are blowing it off. But it seems to me that in the context, if you read the whole rest of what follows, okay, it does sound like that God is saying it's inexcusable for you to do what you're doing, because what you have seen in nature is ample warrant, okay, to believe in and to respond
right.
to.
No, I agree with that. Yeah. And I think that's a very different issue from saying that the scientific methodology from a study of nature can take you from God. I think what you're seeing there is beyond science. You know, I think that's a metaphysical piece. If you're seeing the power and glory of God, you know, it's you're going into metaphysics already, and yeah, you're going to see God in that. You know,
what's it referring to specifically then? I guess I don't understand what your answer means.
What
do you mean? What is it that people should see that would cause them to come to God rather than to sort of live as if God did
the scientific comprehensibility? You know, it's not the scientific ignorance that's in here. You know, it's what you do see. It's not what you don't see.
I'd say people do come to a sense of awe in nature.
Right.
And I think it was, who was a speaker at an event at Gordon last year? Anyway, the idea that you can come to an appreciation of awe, but to find out about Christ, you're not going to get that.
No.
You know, I mean, you would agree with that.
I'm not claiming that, yeah.
Right,
I'm simply saying
that
I think some people, they're first inclination toward wanting to consider that maybe the Bible does have something to say is because of what they see and what's happening in the world today. I'm impressed with how many people who are atheists who are very concerned about fine-tuning and all of the mathematical forms and stuff. I mean, you can read quote after quote after quote that says, man, this is a real challenge for me as an atheist, okay? And it seems to me like what I see science doing today is presenting those kinds of things. That paint a picture of a world that is remarkable in so many ways that people who were pretty comfortable with believing that there really wasn't a God are now having sort of second thoughts.
And I personally tend to see that as a God of the gaps.
Okay.
Kind of way, because what if all of a sudden we understand why the speed of light is the speed of light, and we understand why these constants are, and they're all interconnected,
mm-hmm.
as Randy had said, there it goes. There goes your faith. You can't base faith on that, I think. I mean, I feel very strongly about that. And the same with, as a biologist, the complexity of the body, the genome, whatever, and then you start to explain how cellular pathways work. Poof, there goes the mystery.
But are we doing that with the resurrection? Because what do you do with the resurrection then? Okay. Because the resurrection.
You're not going to explain that, I think. I don't think you're going to explain
that. Well, I don't think you are either. I mean, that's my point.
That's in the realm of
something
special.
We'll find someday figure that out, and we don't want to assume that it won't.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I think in a sense, every time I hear about the multiverse, I just think, I continue to believe that what is learned from that is not this debate about the evidence, but in a sense, scientists have been forced to appreciate religion. As a Christian, we talk about heaven. Where is heaven? We have no idea whether it's in this universe or not. We just we accept the idea that because it's the Almighty, we don't have to say where it is. And we go on under faith. And suddenly the scientists have always poo-poo and say, you're talking about things that can't be tested. You're foolish. And yet the scientists, having gone down to the last wire, find that, my God, we too have to speculate about multiverses. I mean, that's religion. That's
what I liked about Lightman's quote. He's
we have no idea. What does it mean to say that there's a multiverse? Where is it? I mean, that doesn't almost make sense, right?
Yeah.
It's religion.
Yeah.
Larry was.
You can speak up. We can probably hear you.
Yeah.
All right. I like the idea of comprehensibility and not going from the positive side of the things we want to experience. I'm starting to have a comment about that. There's this fascination that there's not being put together. And even with the constants, suppose we did learn a way that mechanism for that to happen, it would still not subtract, I think, from the all of what we do know.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we did not have knowledge today that those constants existed with the science and the math. If we did not have that knowledge, we would not be having this discussion. In the same way, it's always been a discussion all the time about the science of the universe and all that stuff. But so that kind of rings true. I mean, it's clear in Psalm 19, heaven's declared in the word of God in Romans 1. But you can look at those things and say, well, because of the things that we do understand and that we can see, we can have faith in God and takes faith. So what we're really saying is just because we can understand the physical and natural mechanisms doesn't mean that God didn't somehow, by faith, create it that way, but that's more of a metaphysical position.
Well, it's a question of how God did it, okay? If I come up with some fancy explanation for that, that's not going to bother me. Okay, because I think at this point, at the end of the day, it's like with the multiverse. If we were to show there was a multiverse and God did it with this overwhelming amount of probability resources, then it would simply create. It doesn't solve the problem because it still requires all of the different same kinds of principles, mathematical forms, some kind of constants, and so forth and so on. And if there really is a grand theory of everything, I think that'll be in some ways an ultimate proof that there's a God.
Lend support for it's more or less it's when I read this way Rand said science is based on our theology and even God. First, but in a sense it's always been that way that people that are helping to seek out the God is that they somehow find him and see what's around him. This is more of a reason or spirit of this. There's different between understanding how things happened and why. I think from a very philosophical level, I don't think, is it possible to design an experiment that can philosophically or that you had access to all knowledge and all go anywhere in the universe or anything you want? Could you philosophically design an experiment that would explain what purpose is or is that even?
Maybe we are the experiment.
That leads
to another whole evening of discussion here on teleology and purpose. Maybe we'll have to have another one. You want to come back tomorrow night? You're still around? We can continue. That's a good question, but we're going to have to postpone that one to another case. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
We have another
question. That's right. Here we got to move on.
I think the mic might feed back a little, so careful.
Yeah, you're right by the thing.
There's a difference between looking at the beauty of nature or a scientific experiment in a lab and seeing a result and how elegant the result seems to be, and then stepping away from that and concluding that it looks like there could have been a creator that might have designed this, versus you try to understand the concept as far as you possibly can. You come to a point at which you can't understand it any further and requires further experimentation. That's the God of the gaps. And that argument, I think you're using to, in a broad sense, you're talking about different things. You're looking at nature and the beauty of DNA and other things in science and whatever and come to conclusion, which is a metaphysical question, not a scientific one. You step away from that and say, it looks like there must have been a creator involved in this. That's not a God of the gaps, I don't think.
Yeah. I think you're right, if I may interrupt, and I think that's part of the reason why we should have started with a discussion of a definition of evidence. Because that's part of, because, in fact, Walter and I are very much in agreement with most things, but a subtlety here is what constitutes evidence. I don't consider it evidence if you come from that side and kind of saying that at a high level, God is a good rational explanation or causal factor for whatever, the beauty of nature, cosmological constants. I think that's very consistent and compelling, but I don't view that as evidence.
So what would be evidence? Like an experiment that showed a p-value less than 0.05? I mean, the probability of the things that you were suggesting were happening, I mean, that's science. We can't prove anything, but you can certainly say that something.
That's what I'm basically saying. The scientific methodology cannot construct the experiment to reach God.
Nor can it construct the experiment to reach anything.
Right.
Based on
to reach something.
Like
to
what?
Reach anything outside of science.
Or even
outside of the nature.
But I mean, if you could never, if a strong probability of an event, is, so you do an experiment, and you can't. You just have a sample size, and then you have some confidence in whether or not, if you were to take another sample, you would come up with the same result. You can't prove it ever, but you can say with a very strong...
We're not talking proof. We're talking about probabilities and evidence, something that points to it. So we're not looking for proof.
Okay, but
in any of these.
So at what point would, let's say you had some evidence, but if at some point it becomes overwhelming, the probability of certain things happening by chance, then at what point would you say, okay, that would be constitute proof that
proof of what?
Or anything. Okay, I don't want to use the word proof, but let's just say that the probability of that occurring by chance is so outside of the realm of possibility that therefore we have to conclude.
Therefore what?
We have to conclude that this is the mechanism of how something occurred or what
Well, I think if you really can show that there's a phenomenon and that all the mechanisms you know of, the probability is infinitesimal that it will occur, I think you have to come to the conclusion that we don't know. And I think that's a legitimate scientific conclusion. It says we don't know. You know, science at that point doesn't allow us to go further. Now, we can come from a metaphysical point of view as well. We think it's God. But that doesn't come from the science.
But scientists draw conclusions based on evidence where probabilities are not. We don't require that they be infinitesimally small. We just require that there's less than a 5% chance that it would have occurred, that the to reject the null hypothesis.
Right, you reject the null hypothesis.
Right, so it just seems overly stringent that if you have data that, you're requiring that we have, so if data was overwhelmingly suggestive of something, then you would say we don't know? Or would you say...
Well, we'll have to take this offline because I think we're saying...
Fail to reject the null hypothesis.
Yeah.
What?
Fail to reject the null hypothesis.
Yeah.
I think in some of these areas, like, for example, the origin of life, where people say, the probability of this and that and this and that happening is really, really small, right? You've heard all this. But we don't know the mechanism. We just don't know the mechanism.
Of the constants.
We do of other things. Yeah.
Of the constants.
A lot of things where we don't.
Well, if you don't know the mechanism, then you can't put a p-value on it. You can't say what the probability is.
Yeah, you can't.
That's my point. Yeah.
Right. And we'll come back to that.
Make one comment here. I think Randy and I differ on the fact that he thinks that once a person believes there's a God, then he finds all of the fine-tuning is confirmation and support for that, okay? And reinforces his faith.
Right.
Yeah.
But so that's the difference, which is not the same as evidence for it.
No. Well, yeah. Whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Okay, I don't really care, okay? And people sometimes say, well, is this a scientific claim? I said, I don't really care. The question is it true? You know?
Yeah.
And I don't care what label you want to put on it. I happen to believe that there is some benefit in the things that we are finding about the universe that are so remarkable that lots of atheists are making all kinds of comments that also say, this really looks like God was at work, you know, even though I don't believe in a God. And it's amazing how many, you can find hundreds and hundreds of quotes like that, which says to me, people who don't believe in God see some of this and say, wow, maybe I'm wrong. You know? And that's why I think from empirical observations, I think that it does seem to me. Now, we may find out later there is what I think of as a more unified explanation of these things. That won't prove there isn't a God. That'll simply prove that he did it in an even more elegant way than I would have imagined. So I'm not putting all my bets on if they ever figure out how the constants were what they were, that I'm going to go, oh my, well,
And I think we're in too much violent agreement here to have a good fight. because I think you're quite right. I guess my point really as much as let's not look at, we have no idea how this happened. It's just as good evidence to look at everything we do understand. The entire incredible beauty of an apple falling from the tree. We understand the law of gravity. It is as much awe-inspiring to me, and as much evidence for God as anything else.
I completely agree, and that's why I say the laws of nature in mathematical form is one of the compelling evidences.
It's great. Another comment.
I'd like to go back to Romans 1:18 through 20. It seems to me that you shortchanged Randy when you were talking about the translation a little bit. Mm-hmm. I have here the Espeon Greek alongside the NIV, and the NIV text is a good, reasonable translation of the original Greek. And Paul is making the clear point that people, in their ignorance, they were revealed against all godliness and wickedness of people who suppress truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them. And Paul is making a very clear point that when we look at the material world around us, it is plain that there was a creator. And to say otherwise is the why in the face of Scripture. And I come at my faith from the point of view of Scripture first, and science, which I practice all my life, second. In other words, to me, the most important thing is the scriptural concepts. What does Scripture say about something? That, to me, is the ultimate as a Christian.
Yeah, and that was why I brought that point.
That was Walter's question. I'm okay with that. I'm very consistent with that. I'm just saying that I don't think that verse passage in Romans 1 can lead us to believe that scientific methodology, as we practice it now, you know, can lead us to God. I do believe that we, as human beings looking at the universe, can come to God. I think that's fine. That's a little different statement.
Yeah, and let me sort of respectfully disagree with Randy on that, because I think what we've learned in science over the last 300 or 400 years makes belief in God all the more compelling. I do think that the more God reveals himself to us as we study his universe, the more I think the argument for the existence of God becomes more and more compelling.
One thing that I thought of during Walter's talk, when he was talking about precision, was how precision is a human concept because it depends on your number system. So if you have a different base number system, then orders of magnitude would be different. So that just came to mind.
Hard to speak up.
All right.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys. It's been a really interesting exchange. So thanks for coming and everything. But I just had a question for Randy about the argument for ignorance. I just don't really see how that's the case. It seems really unsympathetic if you've read someone like Dembski, whereas this is more of a principled inference, and when the event is highly improbable, it's contingent, and it follows an independently discernible pattern, you can infer design, as you would with anything really, like the SETI project or forensics or paleontology. I don't think it's an argument for our ignorance. On the contrary, I think it's an argument from our knowledge of probability theory and Bayesian probability theory, which Walter touched on some. So I'm not really seeing how that's a case. Furthermore, when you talk about needing to know the mechanism, I'm maybe a little fuzzy on that topic, but I don't think you have to know about the agent to infer agency. Like, if you were to find a heap of material on Mars, of machinery, you wouldn't have to know the agent responsible or if they're capable of it. You would simply be able to infer design from that. And if you had that as a requirement, you'd have this infinite regress of scientific explanations. We'd never be able to learn anything in science. You'd have an explanation for the explanation. You don't have to explain. And this is Dawkins' schoolyard objection that you have to, you know, who's designed the designer? That's just, you don't have to proffer that up. You simply see that there's a design to be inferred. So I'm
right.
Yeah.
Two clarifications here. Okay. First of all, you definitely can do inference and detect design and differentiate. Absolutely. I didn't mean to say you can't do that. This is the right process. To me, Dembski and the intelligent design community are wrong when they follow through on, okay, what is the evidence for design, and is there what is the designer? Is the designer the set of natural processes, or is the designer an independent intelligent agent? I think it's there where they go astray, not in the basic assumption of whether or not you can detect design. I don't think that is the issue. The second clarification here is the issue of mechanism was specifically related to being able to determine probabilities, not causality and the causal relationship. You know, and if you want to determine a probability, I mean, typically in physics, you need to know all paths all reaction paths possible in order to determine a probability. So if you don't know the mechanisms, you don't know those paths. So I did not mean to imply, you know, that you need to know the mechanisms to know a causality factor. So that it's a little different.
Okay, but what we do know, and I may be totally off on this, but what I've read and heard is that these initial constants and quantities, a whole vast range, are consistent with the fundamental underlying laws of nature. So that we do know that. And there's no reason to think that they're any less probable or improbable than any other given set. That would just be ad hoc, it seems.
Well, I think,
consistent.
At least what Ian was telling us last night, right, we really don't know. We don't know whether there's an underlying relationship. There may be. I mean, I like to think there is, but I don't think we have evidence for it yet.
Unless there's a grand theory of everything, which I'm very dubious
about.
Not yet. Then it seems to me that one of the problems with trying to figure out why the cosmological constants are what they are, my nature has the mathematical form of it, is that science isn't very good at studying unique events. And I think the Big Bang is a unique event in history. At least I'm not saying it couldn't have happened more than once, but
as far as we know,
if you believe in the multiverse, then I guess you believe it'll happen a bunch more times, but we won't be able to see it. But it seems to me that that for unique events, science has problems with that. How are we going to determine why the constants are what they are? I mean, for some of these questions, I'm not sure they're answerable in the normal mode that we study science, because science does really good with repeatable things where you can do inferences from observations, you can propose experiments to validate your hypothesis, and unique events aren't really studyable in that way. And I would come back again to the resurrection. If we're going to say, well, I can only believe things like that after I become a Christian, it seems to me that that's putting the cart before the horse. Because, in fact, I'm quite comfortable with the idea that Christ rose again from the dead, and I'm quite comfortable that the laws of nature, as understood by science, will never be the explanation for that. But I don't have to first become a Christian before I can accept that. And it seems to me that with the universe, I feel much the same way. That I think that at this point, the evidence for the resurrection is what compelled a lot of people to become Christians. Even though it was historical data, not scientific data. But it seems to me that there is the same kind of inference to the best explanation when we look at the things that we see in nature and say, is this neutral? Does it really not indicate one way or the other a bias toward a belief in God or not? And almost all of the great scientists through history seem to argue, as Newton did and many others after him, that what they found in nature for them was compelling evidence that strengthened their belief in God and confirmed it, okay, but it also strengthened it. And so I feel like at this point in time, I don't know what the future holds. I'll just say we look at the data and we say what we think makes the most sense today, and it's not proof of anything. But I think for me it is a very strong affirmation that belief makes sense, and the fact that so many atheists are uptight about it and say so, I find to be very interesting. People say, I would much rather believe in 10 to the 500th of the universe is than to believe in God. That's not very parsimonious, is it? I mean, you say, let's take Occam's razor and say, let's take the simplest proposition. And I think the simplest proposition here is much more God, a one God, than a 10 to the 500th of the universe.
Andy? I find it sort of encouraging to hear that a modern atheist in our culture would be more likely to be drawn to faith because of the overwhelming improbability of the universe that we find ourselves in.
Yeah.
To me, that's a surprising and kind of a heartwarming situation that they would be so open-minded to this leap of faith as atheists. Because of this, all these constants together, 10 to minus 500 probability that we find ourselves in a situation. So I find that sort of kind of encouraging to think that atheists would be open-minded enough to consider that. Just be what's probability.
And Michael Reese writes, he was the head of the Royal Society, wrote a really good book called Six Numbers. And he goes through and talks about the remarkable observations from science that these are all true. And late in the book, he says, this is really, really difficult. But he goes on to say, I'm going to believe in the string theory and the multi-universe, because if we don't have lots of probability resources, we're screwed. Okay, well, he's basically feeling the pressure of what we know from science, not what we don't know, but what we do know in terms of what we can see today. And I certainly agree with Randy that what we know and understand in the future may be different. But I have to sort of base what I think today based on what we have today and hold that tentatively. as we do everything in science, right? There's nothing in science that's sort of finally proved. Everything is open to one more experiment that can turn it over.
I just have a question about what you just said about that he's feeling the pressure from the evidences from science. Is it possible that he's feeling the pressure because he already knows that there is a God? I think that's what Romans 1 kind of talks about, that everybody already knows that there's a God and that potentially the evidences from science are just proving what you already know.
It's confirming his worst fears?
Yeah.
And that's possible. With, right? Yeah, since I don't know him personally, but I know reading his book.
That's a good possibility.
Yeah. God may be already dealing with him, and all of a sudden he looks at all this data and goes, oh crap, you know, the source thing. Boo, it's not the way I wanted it to be. Pardon my Texas metaphor.
What time are we going?
You want to do one more?
Another question?
One.
Do it with the mic so everybody can hear.
Yeah, come on up. Yeah. Mic only goes about here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think we all realize science has always been observations first, and then you try to figure it out with repeating it and math and all that stuff. There's been a few hypotheses that were theory first, you know, like predicting the background radiation constant and stuff. But it's mostly been we wouldn't have science if we wouldn't depend on observations. So like something like the resurrection of Christ, I would classify that as an observation, but it's unique, we can't repeat it. So I don't think we need to figure out a mechanism first before we can accept that. More properly, we would say, well, we believe the resurrection because we have testimony of people that have seen it. Now, how did God do it? There must be some natural mechanism to make the body change and all that, and I'm sure there is, but we'll never figure it out because we can't reproduce that. It's more like a unique event, like Walter said. So I would treat that more of an observation, and it's not scientific observation because you can't repeat it.
Yeah, it's historical.
And it controls, right. So, I mean, that's my perspective.
And since the Big Bang is all historical, too, right, because we are observing after the fact all the afterglow, all the remnants of it, and so forth. Before we finish, could I read one short thing?
Sure.
It's only 5 pages long. No. a book that I think you would find interesting on this topic by a person I think is a very credible author, Alistair McGrath, who actually was one of our keynote speakers for our
Tulsa annual meeting.
Called Fine Tune Universe, The Quest for God in Science and Theology. He says two things, well, he says a lot of things. I like, but there were a couple that I marked in here. The facts are known, talking about what we see in nature, but they are insulated and unconnected. The pearls are there, but they will not hang together until someone provides the string. And I like that. And we observe a lot of things in nature, and he's basically saying the ultimate sort of reconciliation of all these things comes, and certainly as a Christian, you can say that things that seem to not hang together in a very different and special way, like a string of pearls. And then one other thing he says that I like here. A growing willingness on the part of empirical, non-dogmatic scientists to consider the metaphysical and religious implications of the scientific enterprise has created new and exciting conceptual possibilities. And I like that. I'm encouraged to see that, and I'll be happy to be wrong. But if this continues to happen, I'll be pleased. Okay?
All right.
Thank you.
God bless everyone. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks, our speaker.